time for In and Around the House with Tony Wirtz and Ernie Brown. Got a question? Call us at 749-B105. Now, let's join Tony Wirtz and Ernie Brown for In and Around the House.
Good morning. Welcome to In and Around the House. It is going to be a great day to get some stuff done in and around your house. A little crisp, and we'll check that forecast for you coming up in just a few minutes. Were you up late, Tony? Norsen up? You went to Northern, didn't you?
I did. I'm a former NKU alum, so it was really cool. It was a great feeling to see, where you went to school, your team in the big dance. That was obviously a first for a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And how exciting, although they lost to Big Blue, still a great game. They hung in there. What did they lose by 9? But I couldn't stay up to answer your question.
Yeah, me either. I didn't even
attend. I watched probably, I have to say, maybe the first 10-12 minutes of the game, and I was like dozing off, and I'm like, management requires me to be here awfully early the next day, so all I can say is I just had to turn it off. I couldn't stay up that late.
Yeah. My wife Lisa was making fun of me. I was trying to watch as much as I could, and of course with the time change, it was still daylight out, and she looked over at me. She goes, "You realize it's 8 o'clock? You're still awake?" And it was almost like the switch was flipped. I started yawning and stretching, and she goes, "I shouldn't have said anything." In bed by 8:30.
Good for you. And then to get up at 3:30, it's like, oh wow, that came fast.
Yeah,
I hit the snooze once.
Oh,
and I don't know about you, but
can't do that
for me. My phone is off on the other, it's over on the other side of the room, plugged in with that alarm, and then the one, on a nightstand. So I got this double system, and you just want to make sure that you don't oversleep.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever done that?
Oh, yeah. It's the worst feeling in the world.
I can imagine.
Yeah. A lot of parties yesterday, of course, St. Patty's Day, and a lot of people sort of just let that cruise right into the basketball game last night for NKU and University of Kentucky. So imagine there's quite a few people who are struggling a little bit this morning trying to get out of the rack.
Yeah. It probably with a green tongue.
Yeah.
It was funny this morning on the way in, those billboard signs, the digital signs that you see on the expressway.
It said, yeah, I love that.
What did it say? Something like the luck of the Irish isn't going to be with you if you're caught drinking and driving.
That's right.
I thought, they're still looking for those guys.
I always kind of chuckle and say, you want to make sure you got a designated driver or that Uber app on your phone, because nobody wants to wake up at the pokey the next day dressed like a leprechaun.
No. That would be bad.
Yeah.
Hey, where are you from, mate? Ireland?
But it was great for celebration for Cincinnati. I had the big parade last week, and then of course the official day, the second day of the tournament. They got more basketball this weekend, so you want to get to your locally owned, independently operated home and garden center early so you can catch those games.
Come and visit us early so you can watch the games this afternoon. But it's been every year this time of year, it's awesome.
Yeah.
The big dance, and we always have really great representation of teams locally that are in a dance, and UC. Mm-hmm. They've done relatively well. Well, they've done extremely well this year. You have Xavier, and you have U of L, UK, NKU.
UC?
So,
yeah
it was awesome.
Do you get a lot of people who will request floral arrangements with their team colors in it for the weekend?
Sometimes. More so UK than anybody.
Of course.
Obviously, I don't know. You've worked in downtown Cincinnati for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
And I remembered after I had gotten out of college, I started downtown, and the first thing that was asked of me, "Are you East Side, U.S. Side?"
Yeah.
I kind of like, where are you coming from? What do you mean?
Yeah, I'm South Side.
So they knew that since I wasn't familiar with that term, that I was obviously from...
you ain't from around here, are you?
No, neutral territory. I'm Swiss, I'm from across the river. So... then I found out rather quickly that they despise UK.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And but it was kind of funny.
Yeah. Good day. Good weekend. More to come next weekend. But the weather, you know, let me ask you that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you the forecast here. But, man, we had some really bizarre roller coaster weather again. And then two big nights of freeze. Mm-hmm. Now we're back into the temperature today with partly sunny skies. Going to be 46. Temperatures back down to 32 tonight, 53 tomorrow, down to 33, then 60 on Monday and Tuesday. Now, earlier in the week, we had overnight lows in the teens and hard freezes. How much damage did that do?
Boy, the fallout is still yet to be seen. Mm-hmm. I definitely know there's going to be some issues. There's going to be a lot of issues with some of the peach trees that were pushing bud and starting to show a little bit of color. I know that we recently have been receiving some of our nursery stock. It's been coming in, and we have peach trees, and they're in full bloom. So I definitely brought those guys into the greenhouse. There was no way that I was able to allow those guys to stay outside.
Sure.
And as a matter of fact, I even turned on some large fans to get them to, to get that air moving around them so they can pollinate. So there's some things that we do in the greenhouse, or most of us who have garden centers and nurseries, and we have the ability to bring things inside and protect them. It's definitely a huge advantage, but it's also a lot of work.
Sure.
But the cold temperatures, I did see some tulips that were just lying down on their sides. Yeah. They're just like, oh.
What about other trees? Help. Like Lisa and I, they have a big, beautiful magnolia tree out in the front yard. So does Mammy.
You could lose a percentage of those blooms. There's a guide for some of those things, especially with the fruit trees, based upon the what the temperature is, how long it goes on for. We had, two or three nights of freezing temperatures. And it does. It has a negative effect. And a lot of times it really shortens the bloom periods. And a lot of times it totally wipes out the bloom.
Yeah. Now, some of them were really beginning to pop just a little bit. And then, of course, those are now really brown and ugly looking. But
So they've taken on your last name?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So the ones that hadn't cracked open, you think they're safe?
Perhaps. It's really tough to tell. And like you said, when you start noticing that they're brown and they really haven't fully opened and developed, more than likely they've been lost. So really time will tell. And it's really hard to predict what has happened. Mm-hmm. And keep in mind, around our homes, we have our own microclimates.
Right.
So depending upon what side of the house that the tree's located on, the temperature, the winds, all that stuff comes into play.
Sure.
And really, it's had a negative effect. And the question that has been asked most often this past week were questions about, will my pansies take it? I put them out a week or so ago. And absolutely, they'll take it. You're going to see them. I left some outside purposely.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to keep in mind, those of us who have retail garden centers, and we thank you for always patronizing our businesses, we'll bring some of those items in because we want them to look good for you when you make that purchase. But I left some pansies outside purposely, and you just tell, they took it on the chin.
Yeah.
They were frozen, wilted over, and they were just like lying there thinking,
why me, Tony?
Why me? Why did you leave me out? But the beauty of it is, pansies are so, so resilient. What I did, just to prove a point, those that took it on a chin that I left outside, I brought inside, they perked back up.
Oh, they did.
Now, what you have to do if you have already planted pansies is this. Allow them to perk back up, get their breath again, and just deadhead them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because you will lose some of that bloom. You'll lose some of the bloom because of the freezing temperatures. And that's what we're really talking about. But just deadhead those.
When you deadhead them, do you take all of those off?
Well, some people will take just the flower off and leave the stem. I like to pinch down into the plant where the stem comes up that gives you the bloom. Because it looks better. Aesthetically, it looks better.
Right.
You don't have these stems sticking out that once had a bloom on them. And you're like, where are you going?
Right.
But, yeah, it's, you know, the cold weather, we'll talk a little bit more about that, too, when we come back, because, you know, it really does not have a negative effect either when we talk about the Fertilum three-step program or using dimension in our landscape beds.
And we're going to cover that when we return. In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And, you know, we've had a couple of really dangerous evenings where temperatures were in the teens overnight. And if you've already started a three-step program or fertilizing your lawn, did anything get affected by that?
No, not really. And the beauty of it is this, when you think about it, temperatures will not affect any of the pre-emergence whatsoever. So, you know, once that barrier starts to set up, as moisture activates it, there's not an issue there. So that's going to set up in a top layer of the soil. The only thing sometimes is for the fertilizer, you may lose a little element of fertilization. That's because moisture activates the fertilizer. And if the soil temperatures aren't really warm enough to push turf growth, then the turf really isn't utilizing or taking in any of the fertilizer. And that's really minuscule because your first application, it only has 16% of it, weight by volume, you know,
right,
of nitrogen in it. So therefore, we're really not trying to push a lot of nitrogen because we know that we fertilize twice in the fall. So really, that whole element about fertilization early, losing a little bit of that, it's nothing to be concerned about at all. It's really getting that barrier down is what's extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've been plagued with crabgrass, you know, Fertilum's first step, the All Seasons 2, which is the red bag, gives you the best protection of anything that you can purchase out there and do your own on the market.
Now, I jumped the gun just a little bit asking about that. What if you wanted to do a little dormant seeding or winter seeding? You have to do that first, or you wait for a little bit of a time for that to go through?
Really, that's a process, and it's an avenue that you can take, one of three, and I'll lay it out here for you.
Lay it out.
You know, we all know that a pre-emergent product will keep and prevent your grass seed from germinating. And most other seed, too. That's the whole objective, is keeping weed seed out, is keeping crabgrass from getting into your lawn.
Mm-hmm.
So, therefore, you're not able to sow grass seed. It's going to affect it.
Right.
So, let's go to the Fertilum, the first step.
Right.
The All Seasons 2, and that has prodiamine in it. That will give you a solid 5 to 6 months protection against seed germinating in your lawn.
Mm-hmm.
Now, anything that's existing, it's not going to happen.
Right.
You're going to have to treat that from a post approach, spray it or do whatever.
Okay. But one other quick question, too, mm-hmm. because we had the overnight freezing for 2 days, then we mm-hmm. had some more rainfall and then a little bit of snow. The ground's too soggy to get out on right now, you think?
Well, you need to determine that because everyone's lawn is different.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have low-lying areas that hold water, moisture,
right.
Yeah, you probably aren't going to be able to get out on the lawn.
Okay.
So, you know, if you walk out there and you sink a little bit,
or in my case,
just back up in the same footsteps that you started out into your lawn in, or turn around and get out of there. Okay? Wait another day.
Yeah.
But going back to your original question, you can take a number of different avenues to sow grass seed. One is you can sow your grass seed, forego the first part of the first application, allow your seed to germinate, uh-huh. allow it to grow, mow it 2 or 3 times, then come back and put down your first step application from Fertilum. That will at least give you 80-85% coverage, mm-hmm. maybe more, maybe a little less. But still, you'll catch most everything, but not everything. Does that make sense?
It does.
But
it does.
So that's one approach. The other one is, too, if you just have spots that you want to sow grass seed in, don't apply that first step around those areas. Use a sheet, pin it down, maybe cardboard, things like that.
Just any kind of barrier.
Just something that would prevent that product from getting onto that particular spot or that area.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you're finished, then sow grass seed. And therefore, you're kind of repairing the lawn, and you're also protecting the lawn.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the second approach. A third approach would be this. It might cost you a little bit more money to use this particular product, but this particular product I'm going to talk about is from Greenview. It contains the chemical element called Siguron. It will also go under another trade name, 2%. And what that will allow you to do, it allows you to sow grass seed and also prevent crabgrass from getting into your lawn. So you're getting the best of both worlds right there.
Right.
Little more, you know, little more salty in price, but, you know, you need to determine which of those three avenues you want to take.
Yeah.
But the most important thing is getting your lawn established. Mm-hmm. If you do not have a lawn, and if it's not thickening up or, you know, getting healthier each year as we go forward, then all the products that you throw at it aren't really going to be effective.
Right.
You have to have a lawn in order to take care of a lawn. And the beauty of it is this. If you have a nice lawn, it's thick, it's healthy, it likes what's been going on and how you've been treating it,
mm-hmm.
it's going to keep 95% of the weeds out just by being thick.
Gotcha.
So then the rest of it's kind of like up to us as homeowners. Yeah, you might have to spot treat a time or two. But once you get it established and you get into a routine of taking care of it, you're golden.
Sure.
And that's what it's all about. And speaking of taking care of it, we'll talk a little bit about the maintenance element because we need to talk about power equipment.
Okay. We'll do that when we get back.
It's important.
In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Going to be a great day to get some stuff done early in or around
right.
your house. And this would be a perfect day to get your lawn equipment to people like Bud Herbert Motors and get it in line so we can get repaired. Do you ever pick yours up?
I did.
You did?
I did.
Yeah, so you got the other mine, day. And you can run by the house and drop it off. Old buddy, old pal.
No, you know what? I didn't even know that yours was still down there. I sent our delivery guy down to pick mine up.
Oh, I don't have a delivery guy.
Well,
I am the delivery guy.
I didn't get yours, Ernie. I'm sorry. It's all about me, not about... No, I'm just kidding. If I had known that, I should have thought of that. I apologize. That was pretty selfish of me, wasn't it?
Yes.
I'm so self-centered. But I did pick mine up.
Awesome. Oh. Did you buy something new every time we go
no,
there?
No, because new. Jeff went down there for me, our delivery guy.
Oh.
But, you know, I had my lawnmower serviced. Great guys down there too. They're Johnny on the spot. They're probably glad that my stuff's out of there because I had they serviced my lawnmower.
Uh-huh.
Looks brand new. They always like they waxed the deck. I'm just kidding. You know, I got white letter tires on my lawnmower. Yeah. Looking good. You know, chrome wheels.
Yeah,
little jacked up.
I'm sure they have mine on exhibit. Going, this is what you don't want to do to a nice piece of equipment like this. Because it is a workhorse. I've got
yours is
walk behind X mark.
Right,
awesome.
You have a big old mower.
Yeah,
big old boy, kind of like you.
Yeah.
Does it eat a lot? Does it like treats?
It does like treats, and unfortunately, it finds a lot of them—big sticks and stones and toys from the grandkids.
You hear that? Yeah, bam. Which leads me to your power equipment is so important for a healthy lawn, especially you know. And when we talk about that, it's the blade. It's all about the blade.
Yeah.
If you do not have a good sharp blade, you're in trouble, especially in the summer months.
Yeah, because that does more damage than good, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And what happens is, if it's not a clean cut, a nice, you know, cut on the blade itself or the
mm-hmm.
turf,
mm-hmm.
it loses moisture. And when you get into the summer months, that's not something that you want to allow to happen.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
So that's not a good thing. And if you just look at the turf occasionally, and if it's jagged, it's not a clean cut, take a look at your mower blade. Either it needs to be resharpened again, or you might have some chunks out of it like you and need to replace it. So you never know. That is so important. In addition to making sure that the oil's been changed, it's at the right level, that the air filter is clean, it's not clogged up with gunk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all these things come into play with your equipment. That's so important.
Yeah.
Nothing more frustrating than when you can't start something.
Oh, my gosh. Nothing worse.
Oh, have you ever just felt like hurling it somewhere?
I have.
Have you ever done that? Are you a thrower?
No, not anymore. Not anymore.
Like, no. When did you grow out of that?
Many years ago. I got over that. I matured and addressed my inner demons with things that don't start, because I started going to places like Bud Herbert Motors and getting quality equipment and, you know, keeping your stuff maintained properly. Mm-hmm. You know, they see it an awful lot up at Crescent Springs Hardware. They take care of it too.
Your stuff,
other broken equipment stuff.
No, I'm kidding you.
Yeah, but you know, as you mentioned, the most important thing is to keep it ready to go, because Lisa will often, years ago, would say, "Put it down, come on up to the porch. I'll get you a refreshment and just sit down for a few minutes. You're getting way too upset."
There you go. You know, so she doesn't look at you out in the yard, seeing you put on the big sweat and not tend to you.
I beg your pardon.
Because sometimes, well, I'm just saying, like I'll have to say, "Hey, Tina, how about ice water? I'm not a camel."
She takes great care of me.
I don't have a big hump on my back. I don't store water there, okay? I'm not a camel out here. I'm sweating a big one.
I'll be honest with you. Lisa does a great job
at
keeping me well refreshed.
That's important.
Yeah.
That's really important. And, you know, the spark plug, too. Everything's got to be new, changed out, ready to go so it fires up.
Mm-hmm.
And have you ever been there and you're trying to... You're pulling the cord, and it's like, are you serious?
I have yanked a couple of starter cords out of stuff like that, you know, the weed eater or, you know, the leaf blower and stuff like that. And then when I do take it into repair up there, I usually hear, "A little frustrated, were you?" You know, you don't have to pull it all the way,
right?
Just a little bit.
And you know what else is important too? If you're operating, you know, two cycle type of equipment, you know, always have fresh gas.
Sure.
And with that mixture every year, start out with that. That's key as well. That stuff really it coagulates, it builds up gunk, and it really keeps things from running properly.
Mm-hmm.
But
always make sure that that you put fresh fuel in it to begin with. You know,
I think that's a big help.
It is.
Right here. If you just do that alone. But I apologize, I didn't pick up your mower.
And routine, regular maintenance is the key there. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about weed and grass stoppers, because there's a lot of things that we can do to prevent some real major headaches in your lawn and landscape. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, and we're getting you ready for what's promising to be a very busy spring. You know, we did have those warmer days, and Lisa was out working in Mammy's flower front landscape and the side bed, and of course the front of our house, and getting a lot out of the way early is the key.
Big time, you know, and using a pre-emergent like high-yields turf and ornamental weed and grass stopper, which contains Dimension, a great product to put into your landscape beds. And going back to where we were at the beginning of the show this morning, where we're talking about temperatures, you know, although it's been on the cold side, it's not going to affect that pre-emergent element about it.
Uh-huh.
So still, you know, the whole month of March and going into the middle part, latter part of April is the ideal time to put these products down. So we still have a wonderful window of opportunity here to really keep ourselves from having to do a lot of work unnecessarily later in the season by preventing weeds from cropping up into our landscape beds. It really does. It makes a huge difference. And that is something that you need to have if you're not using... Something you need to have if you're not using the pre-emergent products, a good kneeling pad.
Yeah.
And a good weed tool, you know, to dig in there.
And a husband that doesn't put bird seed on the handrail.
Yeah, you talked about that last week.
I got to confess, you know, this was pretty funny. I came home during that cold snap. I put some bird feeders out off the side of the porch because I enjoy sitting there while I'm working and watching the birds. And I said, "I'm trying to figure out what this one bird is. It's just so pretty." And Lisa said, "Well, I asked you not to put that stuff out there." I said, "Yeah, no, I just really wanted to see this one bird." And so I came home from work the other day, and she had the bird book out and said, "It is a tufted titmouse."
Yeah.
Now get that off the porch.
There you go.
Now you know what bird it is.
She identified it for you. I like
she
that.
She did. Now get that off the porch. I'm tired of cleaning out the flower bed.
There you go. But High Yields Turf and Ornamental Weed and Grass Stopper, a great product. It works a lot like Preen. A lot of people are familiar with Preen. Preen, too, is a good product. But it doesn't last quite as long. And you can find the High Yield products and all the Fertilume products that we talk about only at your independently operated, owned garden centers and nurseries. So stay in the community, stay local, so important. Mm-hmm. I can't say that enough. I really can't. You know, just on, we know that on average, every dollar that we spend, 67 cents stays in the local economy. If you're shopping at the big chains, only 43%. So there's a huge difference right there. So, you know, the more that we can keep money here locally, the better our economy is going to be locally. So support your locally owned and operated independent garden centers and nurseries.
Agreed. Because when you're at the big box stores, all you're doing is building that golden parachute for four or five guys.
Yes, you are. And everybody that's on the board and all those stockholders, right?
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. Plus,
if you're going to help with a parachute, make it a local parachute.
There you go. And most importantly, too, when you go to your local home and garden, or I always say home and garden, your garden centers and nurseries, you're going to get great advice. You're going to get professional information. Yeah. You're going to get knowledgeable, you know, people helping you solve your issues or help you, you know, lay out a landscape, a look. Mm-hmm. Or if you're looking to replace a shrub or a tree, you're going to get that information that's pertinent to what you're doing, and it's going to be really good information, and you're going to be successful.
I agree. And, you know, one of the things I love about it is when you go on a regular basis, they get to know you. So when you walk through the door, they call you by name. What are you looking for? What are you working on?
Right.
And how can I help you?
You know, I can just go on and on. Over in Northern Kentucky, myself at Jackson Florist and Garden Center, Todd Baton and Steve down at Baton's Nursery, mm-hmm. Scott Maddox out there at Maddox Nursery. We're passionate about what we do, so you're going to get the information that you need and the help that you need to be successful when it comes to taking care of things in your landscape or your garden or whatever it is you want to do. And, you know, cross the river, you know, our great friend up there at Ed's Feed and Seed, wonderful guy. You have Jim Montag. You have Bart Rowland and Ken over at Burger Farms. You have mm-hmm. Bob at Bard's Nursery.
Right.
You know, there are a lot of these guys that are passionate about what we do, their industry, our industry, and we really, truly, truly care, and we want to get you the right information. And if we don't know, we'll tell you we don't know, but we certainly know where to go to find out, too. Mm-hmm. We learn something every day in this industry.
And speaking of Ed's Feed and Seed, I still use that peanut ring that he gave me. I told him I really love watching the Blue Jays, and he said, mm-hmm. you're going to love this, because I kept complaining. I'd put stuff out for the Blue Jays, and the squirrels would just raid it. He goes, put this up there, the Blue Jays can get to it, and that tufted titmouse bird will get to it, and the squirrels can't.
Do you ever put out raw peanuts for those guys?
Yeah, that's what I put in the peanut ring.
Okay, so it's in the shell, right?
Yeah, in the shell. Okay. Yeah. And it's kind of funny to watch them work so hard to get it out of there, but they do a good job.
It's funny. You know, I used to put a lot of those peanuts up on the deck rail.
Yeah.
And the little tufted titmouse, he would do everything that he could do, or she, and to pick up that peanut with that little beak. And once they were able to maneuver and get that peanut in the beak, they would fly off, and it looked like the weight of the peanut would disrupt their flight pattern, and they would like drop down a couple thousand feet in altitude and then gain it right back,
hoping to catch an updraft.
It's funny. And then you had the big bullies like you that won it all, the Blue Jays.
Yeah, I love those.
They'll come up to the deck rail, they'll just scream and just let it all out. Mm-hmm. Want everybody to know that, hey, those are my peanuts.
Right.
Get away.
Sure.
And, you know, it's like, come on. There's enough for everybody.
Sure. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. We have a couple more things we're going to touch about the Weed and Grass Stopper. And then we're also going to talk about the tree and shrub drench. You may be concerned about your trees because of the freezing weather. We'll tell you what to expect. Coming up next. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Before we went into the break, I got Tony kind of off track a little bit of it, talking about the birds. But tell me again a little bit about the weed and grass stopper and the landscape issues and how I can make my wife happier.
Well, that's high yields product. That's the turf and ornamental weed and grass stopper, just as you stated. It has the product, contains that product we call Dimension. It's called Dimension, and it works really, really well. You're going to get a solid 4 months protection, keeping things from germinating in your landscape beds.
Right.
Now, you have to keep in mind, the landscape beds as well, like the lawn, whatever's in there is in there.
Right.
So you're going to have to do your due diligence, pick up the right product to spray. And in the landscape beds, you know, just simply pick up a bottle of Kills-All, Roundup, you know, something with a little trigger spray.
Right.
And just spray those isolated weeds that might be there, or if it's a grouping of weeds. But be sure and be careful not to get that on something good. You know, your desirables. Mm-hmm. You can always end up doing some damage to your other plants in the landscape. Now, it's been too cold to do that. That's a fact. Yeah. So just to let you know, everything's really driven by temperature when we start talking about herbicides.
Right.
So, you know, that's out of the question. So wait till we start to warm up, which it looks like we're going to do that for the most part this upcoming week, which we desperately, desperately need. And it's just incredible. You know, we were having March weather in February. Now we're having February weather in March. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Weird.
Weird, weird, weird. But going back to the Dimension product, I tell people this all the time. I like Preen too, but Preen gives you about 3 months protection, whereas Dimension gives you four.
Right.
Hands down. It's a lot less expensive. And if you have a Preen jug or whatever, if you have a dispenser or something, an applicator, I just tell people all the time when they come into the nursery, are you using Dimension? No, never heard of it. What's a great product?
Mm-hmm.
It's inexpensive.
Right.
Fill up your canister with it.
Sure.
So keep that applicator on hand, and you'll want to use these products at least twice a year.
Right.
You know, that's going to give you some really good coverage. Come back sometime in the middle of the summer so you can get some of those weeds, the seed that starts to try and germinate, you know, on us in the fall.
Right.
And you'll keep all that unwanted riffraff stuff out of your landscape.
Riffraff. Now, you mentioned that about that already being there. It gets in your landscape bed by getting blown in, or
absolutely.
There's something else that I wanted to ask
blown in, like insulation.
Whatever they purchase and use to put down, if you're not careful, you buy some mulch that's got stuff in it, or
you could.
Soil.
Perhaps. You know, we talk about that all the time, too. Soil, especially, and I'm glad you brought that up, Ernie, because when people are fixing or repairing areas in the landscape, their lawn, and they're bringing in soil from an outside source, perhaps by the truckload or pickup truck or dump truck or what have you, make sure that it's clean, clean soil. I've fallen victim to this before in the past. As a homeowner, I was a youngster, and I was repairing a sinkhole with just a generic topsoil that I bought for like $15-$20 a truckload, and I got $15 to $20 worth of topsoil because I had more weeds in that than I did turf after I had sown grass seed. And I hear it all the time, Ernie. People will come in and say, well, that seed that I bought at such and such, it had a lot of weed seed in it. I'm here to tell you, no, it did not.
Right.
It was the soil that you brought in, more than likely. So pay attention to what you're using. It's so, so important.
And always get quality product.
That's right.
Tony, we have Renee on the line who has a question for you about some of the high-yield products. And what was your question, Renee? Thanks for hanging on.
Hi. So my question is, I like, a lot of, not sure how to say it, but certain things in my landscape, like the ornamental grasses. I have a black grass. Not sure what it's called.
Is it low growing, the black grass that you have?
It is, and like butterfly bushes, and I have ferns. And my question was, is the high yield prevent those from emerging?
No. Not at all, because they are perennials. They're already established. It only works on seed.
Gotcha.
So you're not, don't be
just worried about some of the butterfly bushes because they grow wild around my house, and sometimes I'll transplant them into the landscape because they're like nuts. And I was just afraid that if I got that on them, cutback.
No, not at all. Now, it perhaps, you know, this is what you will see. Anything that will self-sew or volunteer, you know, like the Rose of Sharon is a good example. You know, it would keep that from germinating, you know, if it just stuff like that. But for the most part, anything that's established, perennial, shrub, tree, no.
Well, butterfly bushes, they do spread.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't noticed the one so much, but another one, it will have little, you know, baby ones that
right.
come up around it.
Right. Most are sterile, too, so it depends. Is that an older variety that you had that we're talking about?
It is.
Like one of the taller varieties?
Yes.
Maybe like, yeah.
Yeah,
that's
and it
not
was
a...
there when we purchased the house, and I cut it back because it was having
right.
some issues, and right. It just flushed everywhere.
Yeah. No, I love the Buddleia, and a lot of the newer varieties, the shorter varieties, the Lo and Behold series and so forth. You know, I'm not going to say that nothing can ever self, you know, sow seed and germinate somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
But primarily, you can rest assured that you're not going to have things like that because they're pretty much sterile.
Okay.
But not that it couldn't change. But your older Buddleias, yeah, that would be pretty common. You know,
okay.
I wouldn't be surprised to see stuff like that.
Okay.
But going back to your original question there with the high yield, mm-hmm. you know, the turf and ornamental weed and grass stopper, it's a great product to use in your existing beds, and it will in no way whatsoever harm anything that's already there.
Right, and I've been using it for parts of my landscaping, but I was just afraid to use it in those areas because I didn't want to, you know, hinder growth of
yeah.
those types of things. So that's good news. I will have less weeds.
Yeah, it works great. You know, and actually try to apply it a couple of times throughout the season. You know, and a lot of it has to do, too, like if you have an irrigation system or we go through some periods in the summer months where we get quite a bit of rain, keep in mind that always lessens the effectiveness, its residual rate. So, you know, if we go through the month of July and say we get 12 inches of rain, well, that's definitely going to reduce that effectiveness, so you might have to reapply a little earlier.
Oh.
But other than that, things are pretty much normal, and you're going to get that good solid 4 months protection from the turf and ornamental weed and grass stopper. And that's the product
okay.
that we call, you know, when we say put dimension down, that's what's in that product.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw that on the bag, and I've been using it the past couple seasons, and it's really helped because we have a chigger issue at our home also, and it's really hard for me. I'm super sensitive to them,
mm-hmm.
and it's really hard for me to get out in the beds. And by doing that, it's helped tremendously.
Boy, I've not had, you said chiggers, right?
Yeah.
Boy, I've not had chiggers
I've
in a long time.
I've never experienced them until we moved there, but it's very wooded around
right.
our lot. And, you know, I've pretty much been told that there's not a whole lot we can do to control them unless you have any ideas on that.
You know, I'd have to do a little bit of research. I'm wondering if there's a product called Turf Ranger that is great for a lot of different things in the landscape and in the lawns. I'd have to look on that bag and see if they're listed, but nothing worse. I remembered one time being on a picnic with somebody, and, you know, you're kind of like, you're on one side, and the next day or two, all of a sudden, the side I was on the lawn, I was riddled with chiggers, and it's like, whoa. You just scratch
yeah.
yourself to death.
It's terrible. It's the worst thing. I would not wish it on my worst enemy, I don't think. And I had never experienced them because, we moved into this new home, and I thought for sure we had bed bugs. I was freaking out. I was going through everything. And a guy came out, an exterminator, and he's like, why don't you stay inside for a couple of days?
Yeah, there you go. Well, hopefully that cleared that up.
That's what it was.
Good.
Well, have a great weekend. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a minute. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about some seeding issues and talk a little bit about Central Farm. We're going to do a phone interview with Tim Wood a little later on, talk about a couple of things.
Oh, the Drift Rose.
Yeah.
So hang out with us because around the 8 o'clock hour, Tim Wood from Star Roses, we're going to get in touch with him and talk about some things that's happening, some new things, and more about the Drift Roses after a while as well.
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. I forgot to get her name, but we had a listener call that suggested if you mix flour and sulfur flour, I think I got that right, and put that around your feet or your ankles, that the chiggers will avoid you like the plague. So
really?
Yeah.
So I never heard of that.
Not, I didn't either.
But I did look up the product Turf Ranger from High Yield, and chiggers are listed on the bag as controlling those.
Nice.
So not a bad gig, you know?
Not bad at all.
Yeah. Boy, so I don't even like that word, chigger. No, but it's been a long, 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 long time since I've had an issue with chiggers.
I just remember growing up, going out and playing all day long, and then come home. If you didn't get in early enough, you were eating up with them.
Big time.
Yeah.
Oh, a little nasty mite. That's all I can say.
Nasty mite.
Yeah. Nasty mite. He liked that. Anyway, we're talking about dormant seeding, too, which is winter seeding, and we're still at the tail end of winter, getting ready. We're fast moving into the spring season. Still a good time to sow grass seed. I take advantage of the freezing temperatures and the warmer temperatures as we get into the middle part of the day. That freezing and thawing action makes it ideal for us to sow grass seed still at this time of year, provided you're not using a pre-emergent. We say this all the time. You know, if you have a lawn service company that is taking care of your lawn and you have intentions on sowing grass seed or working on some areas in the lawn that need attention, make sure you get with them and check to see if they've already applied a pre-emergent. That's so important, because if not, then what you put down seed-wise likely isn't going to work out for you. And you'll go back to the store where you bought the seed, and you'll say this was bad seed.
And that's not the case.
That's not the case. But in talking about seed, a favorite turf, tall fescue, that we talk about often here on In and Around the House, Fine Lawn Elite has been a favorite amongst a lot of homeowners over the years. And Fine Lawn Elite, our good friends from Central Farm and Garden, have taken it a step further. And now they've developed Fine Lawn Elite into a new seed called Fine Lawn H2O.
Great.
And you will only find this at your independent garden centers. So Fine Lawn H2O is the most recent release of qualified drought-tolerant tall fescues.
And the good news is it may save you some money in water.
It could. It very well could. And, you know, Fine Lawn H2O, one of the real key benefits about it, it uses less water. Less fertilizer, therefore fewer chemicals. So think about it. You know, we have this lawn that's a little bit more resilient, drought tolerant, less stress. And when you have less stress with the plant, turf or perennials or trees or shrubs, less likelihood of, you know, insects wanting to prey upon them.
Sure.
You know, when you're weak, they get in.
True. And we always seem to have that run where we don't get enough water during the course of the year or during the course of the summer. And in order to salvage your lawn, you're out there with a sprinkler. And with this stuff, you may not have to be.
Right. Well, and it can save you. Now, keep in mind, up to 40% watering. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean you're going to see 40. And if you don't see it, you call somebody up and say, hey, that didn't happen.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of factors that come into play. It might save you 5% of having to water more often, 12%, 20%, it says up to 40. So that's still a huge benefit. As we progress and move forward every year, we hear of these water restrictions. You know, water conservation is becoming more important than ever. And being able to still have a beautiful lawn that gives you that exceptional turf quality, you know, capabilities, and you don't have to water it as often, that's a huge benefit.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind. You don't lose anything. You don't even skip a beat with Fine Lawn H2O. I'm that convinced of it, and we're selling a lot of it already.
Now, let me ask you about this. If you have a regular lawn already out there, will this integrate with your regular lawn?
It plays well with others. Yes, it does.
That's what I was asking.
It's a tall fescue, and you're not even going to really notice a difference.
Uh-huh.
So look for it at your local garden centers and nurseries. That's the only place you're going to find it. And, you know, we can go way back to the old days when we talked a lot and often about Fine Lawn 5GL. Then there for a while, it disappeared. I think somebody bought it and kept the patent and shelved it. Then all of a sudden came about Fine Lawn Elite. Mm-hmm. And I've used Elite all the time. Straight up, I'll blend it. It doesn't matter. A great tall fescue. As long as you're using tall fescues, that's the key. That's really important. They do better in our areas. You know, they're cool season grasses. Now, I will tell you this. Our good friends over at Turpin, I think the world of Turpin, great guy. He's got a lot of turf experience. You know, he still leans a little in the direction of bluegrass.
Yeah.
And I did pick up some sod over there. So if you're not really wanting to sow grass seed, you know, sod's another route to go. And Ernie, I'm telling you, that sod is as green can be. I had to do a little bit of an area around my deck,
mm-hmm.
kind of like an area where my irrigation system doesn't quite reach. And occasionally I got to do a little bit of repairs. And I'm telling you that it's beautiful. It's a dark green right now. It looks spectacular. So that's another approach. If you don't want to sow grass seed, hey, you can always go over and pick up sod.
Yeah. And that adds instant color, instant success, and it's pretty much what everybody wants these days.
Gratification right away.
Bam.
Instant, right now. I want that tree to be 80 feet. No, I want that shrub to be 12. It doesn't
now,
work like that.
I want it now.
No. Be patient. Be patient. Yeah. And, you know, talking about seed, this is another important element as well. How much seed? You know, that's an often asked question. How much seed do I really need to use? More is not better. Mm. You know, when seed lies on top of seed and on top of seed and on top of seed, and it stays overly wet for a long, for a period of time, it rots. It doesn't do anything.
Sure.
You don't get any benefit whatsoever. So
you're wasting money.
So, just a good rule of thumb, you got to look at your lawn two ways. One, are you just overseeding? Or two, is it totally bare?
Okay.
If you have a lawn that's totally bare, or a spot or an area that's totally bare, you typically, on average, now this can fluctuate just a little bit, per 1,000 square feet, you're going to use anywhere from, say, 6 to 10 pounds.
Okay.
That's a bare area per 1,000 square feet. You should get that kind of coverage. Now, you just take that and half that rate when you want to overseed for 1,000 square feet. Okay, so you're going to use.
I didn't know there's going to be division.
I know. So that's what comes into play here. So you use half the recommended rate if you're just overseeding per 1,000 square feet. It's going to be 3 to 5 pounds.
Gotcha.
Okay, and what's important as well is to make sure that you have good soil to seed contact.
Mm-hmm.
Extremely important. And also, right now at this time, people are asking me too: should I go ahead and put down straw? You can, but limit that straw. It's not necessary right now. And really, a lot of people think that straw is there to keep the birds out from away from the seed.
I was just going to say that. You know, that's one of the things that I always get wrong. You know, I got an area that
I want
to
see. Why do you get that wrong?
Because I exercise just what you say. I say, well, I got to get some straw down, so I'll pick up a bale of straw and throw it everywhere and cover it up and thinking I'm keeping it away from the birds, and that I'm not doing any good for the grass seed or the area I'm trying to fix.
Well, the birds are going to be more apt to get into the straw and take it somewhere and roost with it.
Okay? Yeah, especially now.
Do a little interior decorating at the home.
Yeah.
Or at the roosting box or the whatever.
Yeah.
But straw really serves two major purposes. You know, when you get into the warmer months, what straw does, it helps with moisture retention.
Uh-huh.
And, it also keeps the soil surface a little cooler. So the germination process is quicker, it's better, and it's more effective. And when you put straw or apply straw over top of what you just recently sown grass seed wise,
mm-hmm.
always do it at about a 40 to 50% coverage ratio. I want you to be able to look down and see soil surface. A lot of guys will do it too heavy, and guess what? If it stays wet for a prolonged period of time, it smothers things. Air and light are not penetrating that heavy layer mm-hmm. of straw. And plus, that's more that you're going to have to get out at some point in time.
Sure.
And you have another choice. If you don't want to use straw, if you don't need a full-size bale, you can buy seed accelerator. Little green, papery-type pellets mm-hmm. from Greenview. Works extremely well. I've used it before. You throw a little bit out, about a quarter of coverage, and when it gets moist, it swells, and it serves as a mulch. And it's biodegradable, and it breaks down. Nice. So we sell a lot of seed accelerator. That's a nice little bag that you can have if you're ever just wanting to put something over top of some mm-hmm. newly sown areas that are small.
Right.
perfect for those applications.
Now, let me ask you, if you have a large area that you need to get done, tell me about seed slitters. Is that something that the average homeowner needs to use?
That would be very beneficial. It will save you a lot of work. And the beauty of the seed slicer, seed slitter, is that you can adjust that to place the seed just into the top portion of the soil surface at the right depth without covering it too deep. If you cover seed too deep, the germination ratio is going to be a lot less.
Okay.
But it will also scratch up that soil surface, and it gets you that really good soil-to-seed contact,
mm-hmm.
and it expedites that whole process. So if you have a sizable area, and I'm glad you brought that up. I wasn't even thinking along those lines.
That's why I'm here.
That's why you're here. That does make it a lot easier. Uh-huh. It really does.
Yeah. And I'm all about making it easier.
Yeah. And one last thing, too. It's extremely important to use a seed starter fertilizer. Fertilum makes a great one, and it contains a higher middle number of phosphorus. And phosphorus is a key element, very important for newly developing turf seed to get established.
Uh-huh.
You know, we have a lot of phosphorus, and we're going to talk about something else too, so keep that in mind. We have a lot of phosphorus that's in the soil, but it's not being released. So using it as a, you know, from a seed starting standpoint is extremely important, mm-hmm. very beneficial. And if you're doing large areas, I always encourage the homeowner, put your seed starter fertilizer down first,
mm-hmm.
then put your grass seed down second.
Okay.
Therefore, you're not walking out and trampling and displacing the seed once you sow it by fertilizing.
Gotcha. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, and talking about the soil and seeding. It's important to know what kind of soil you have and getting a soil sample. Tony's got a couple of, examples of that. We've posted them on our Facebook. When we come back, we're going to talk about those. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And as we mentioned, we're going to talk a little bit about soil next. If you want to, if you haven't already looked us up and liked us on our Facebook page, do so. And you can go right to a couple of examples that Tony's posted about how important a soil sample is when you're trying to grow something. And you can tell it's an official document because there's a little happy, smiling face on there.
No, that makes it official. Actually, our friend that we had in here with us once before in the past from Kenton County Extension Office,
yeah,
that's Michelle Stanton's little artwork.
Oh, well, we're going to give her
Isn't
a sticker.
An artist. Yeah, a little smiley face.
So tell me about this. You had a client come in?
This is textbook. It really is. And I thought it was so appropriate to put out on our Facebook page so people can see just how important that a soil sample truly is and how valuable this information really is.
Mm-hmm.
The thing of it is, you know, I say this all the time. If you're a physician and you think that you have a patient that has high blood pressure,
mm-hmm.
well, if you don't take their blood pressure, how do you know what to really prescribe and how can you control it?
Mm-hmm.
Take that same analogy as best I can do it, and I'm always doing these silly analogies, and liken it to a soil sample.
Okay.
Knowing what your soil is comprised of, made up of, is so important. And in this particular situation, this gentleman, he had two soil samples, and one of them was for an area where he grows blueberries.
Okay.
This is great. And the little smiley face that Michelle Stanton had put here was around the pH level of the soil because it's at a 4.8,
okay.
which is, like, ideal, perfect for blueberries.
Right.
If you want to be successful with blueberries, that pH level's got to be low, meaning that the soil is acidic.
Right. Let's go through all of those so that I can understand this a little
bit.
The phosphorus,
no,
you said something about that it's climbing in the chart.
It's very high.
Okay.
We have a lot of phosphorus in our soil. And like I was telling you, when we were talking about the seed starter fertilizer for sowing grass seed, you know, although we have these high elements of phosphorus in our soil, it doesn't release.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, we need to add to it. And this is a perfect example. It's very, very high. We have a lot of limestone.
Yeah.
So you're getting that element, you know, it's there. So, you know, then there's potassium, and then you got that pH, which is really important in this whole scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Calcium, they're measuring magnesium, zinc. Those all come into play with plants. And when a plant is in its ideal pH range,
mm-hmm.
that is the point where it will take in the most amount of nutrients that's available to it. So, if, like, for example, these blueberries, if this soil sample came back and it was in the 7.4 range, you could fertilize that those blueberry bushes all you want.
It's but not going to help.
It's not going to help. It's really not going to take it in. So right. when it's in its ideal pH range is when it pulls in all the nutrients that, for the most part, are available to that plant, that particular perennial or that shrub or that tree.
Right.
So this is textbook, and I can't say it enough. Our extension office in Northern Kentucky, Campbell, Kenton, Boone, awesome facilities. You know, they're there for our services as businesses and homeowners. Take advantage of it. A lot of interesting things that we can find out through our extension services. They provide great services every day throughout the course of the year. And these people like what they do. And it's such a benefit. Sure. It really is. It helps us tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
And
I did notice that the magnesium is also charting pretty high there. What does that do for the soil?
It's just another trace element.
Mm-hmm.
You ever heard of people wanting to say, hey, I'm going to add Epsom salts to my tomato plants?
Yeah.
Because it's very important. Well, Epsom salts has magnesium.
Okay.
So in this situation, if you told me I'm also adding Epsom salts,
right.
I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to ask you why.
Okay.
So, you know, it's not necessary. So knowing what your soil is made up of is so important. A lot of times, too, you know, people say, hey, my grandpa always said, or my neighbor down the street said, put lime down. Well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
If you put lime down, you're going to make that pH level higher.
Right. Okay.
You know, we don't.
You're defeating the purpose.
Yeah, we don't want that.
No.
We do not want that whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a great, this is textbook. This is why when we talk about soil samples, it's so, so important. It really is.
Yeah.
And this is great. Michelle Stanton, you did a wonderful job, and I liked how you even had taken it a step further and given the homeowner a little bit more information about other things to apply. They have a really a prosperous and just a well maintained garden bed.
Mm-hmm. You know, the soil and the little happy face was a nice addition.
Oh, you like that.
I do.
You're all over that.
The other soil sample that you posted is about his garden.
Right.
So let's walk through that just a little bit.
Same phosphorus thing.
Up at the same level.
Now, yeah, everything pretty much mirrors the other bed,
mm-hmm.
but the soil pH is just a little higher. It's a 5.8.
Okay.
So the higher you go, the more alkaline we get, but this is still acidic. So, if you see in this particular soil sample, she's written down some additional notes. She's wanting him to add a little bit more lime.
Right. Okay.
So, we're trying to raise that pH just a little bit. A little too acidic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did you notice that she didn't mention lime for the blueberries?
She did not.
So, therefore, you're getting the right information.
Exactly.
And I love it when people come in with these kinds of reports, and it could be weeds. It gives us a starting point.
Sure.
And then we build upon it.
Right. And there's no guesswork involved. This is the results from the study that they do. Now, I did notice that the calcium level in his garden is much higher than where he's trying to grow the blueberries. Is that just because of years of...
I didn't see the calcium on the other. Are you talking magnesium or calcium?
No, it says calcium on
the... Yeah, the calcium's a lot higher.
Yeah, it was 2497. Is that from old plants and stuff breaking down?
You know, I really don't know. I can't answer that. Okay. But here's where calcium comes into play. You know how we always talk about our tomato plants, if we get the little the black spot underneath on the bottom?
Yeah.
Or bell peppers? That is a lack of calcium. As the fruit is developing. So that's why calcium is important in vegetable gardens.
Right. Okay.
And it can still be available. However, poor watering habits, meaning that although that calcium is available, if you allow it to go dry for periods of time, there's no moisture for that plant to pull up the calcium.
I got you.
So therefore, there's a calcium deficiency, but it does not necessarily mean that it's not there.
Mm.
It's poor watering habits. Great. This is great. Check it out on our Facebook page. And Ernie, I'm glad you brought that up. And kudos to our cooperative extension agents and services over in Northern Kentucky.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about drift roses. Everybody wants to know about the roses so they get an early start. It's almost like the tomatoes. We always see those guys go, I've already got tomatoes. And there's always those who go,
they're already starting. They're already starting. I see it already.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. A little Dobie Gray, Drift Away. That's what we're going to talk about in this segment, Drift Roses. And it is that time of the year where everybody likes to brag about how quickly they got their roses up and running. And Tony's got some great info that's going to help you be the best and the first.
Well, we've been talking about roses, that's right, the last couple of weeks. And, you know, primarily, too, because of the weather that we've been experiencing. You know, it's been rather cold. We've had those freezing temperatures, and typically a lot of times when we see the forsythia shrubs in bloom, which we've seen some of that, kind of a phenological indicator that, hey, it's time to prune back your rose bushes late winter, early spring. And be sure to hang out with us here, too, as we approach the top of the 8 o'clock hour, because we're going to be talking with Tim Wood. He's a representative from the company called Star Roses, where a lot of our roses come from. And we're going to talk a little bit about what's new and other things concerning roses. But right now, it's the drift rose.
Mm-hmm.
And the drift rose, it's a very... It's a noteworthy rose. It's a ground cover type of rose. And... It was hybridized by crossing miniature roses with traditional ground cover roses, thus giving us a beautiful low-growing rosebush type shrub. And the drift rose, I'm going to be honest with you, before we get talking about drift roses,
mm-hmm.
it's a plant that deserves a lot of merit. And if you have space constraints, because it's low growing, its spreading habit, it's staying low, makes it ideal for those types of situations. But what I want to say is this: in a container in the nursery does not do that plant any justice. It deserves a lot more merit than what you see when you see it in the nursery or the garden center. And once they're in the ground, and I'm going to point this out to you, Ernie, Late last fall, we have some drift roses right here at the studio, mm-hmm. at the station.
Yep.
As you walk in where the key fob swipe unit is, right there to the left are drift roses. They were stunning. They were beautiful.
I've been working with them.
I know you have. And they're well maintained. They've been taken care of over time. And they were giving exceptional, exceptional bloom production.
Mm-hmm.
It was just there. Ideal for that spot. You know, kind of a, there's some space constraints there.
Mm-hmm.
So they have their role in the landscape. But I will tell you this, sometimes in a container in the nursery, don't let that fool you. Not everything does as well in a container as it does once it's in the ground and it goes to its first winter. Always keep that in mind. And that's why it's important to go to your local garden centers and nurseries and ask us, what are our feelings about some plants? Because we're going to be candid with you. We're not there just to sell you something and say, oh, I got that person for a big sale.
Sure.
We want you to understand how these plants behave and what you can expect to see. But the drift rose, it just their toughness, their ability to resist diseases make them a must-have in a landscape. And if you have areas where you have space constraints, you have to definitely consider a drift rose.
You know, that's also an area that gets all-day sun. Once the sun clears the edge of that building, mm-hmm. you know, the entryway,
right.
it bakes that area, and they perform very well.
They do. And I would, every Saturday morning when I would come in here to do the show with you, I would just admire how nice they truly, truly look. And a lot of times we forget about the drift rose. You know, everybody used to always talk about the knockout rose. Well, we're going to talk about some knockouts, too, when we talk with Tim Wood from Star Roses.
Mm-hmm.
But the drift rose, they're just so versatile, Ernie.
Yeah.
You get so much from the drift rose. And that's because of their low-spreading growth habit. They're just incredible, and they just give you a burst of color.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're versatile in such a way, like I've been saying, that they're ideal for small spaces. So, like, I'm a hammer on this. If you have small space constraints, definitely get out to your local garden centers and nurseries this spring season and look for some drifts and just inquire into the drifts. They come in a number of colors. They're excellent for borders. They do relatively well in containers.
Do well in all-day sun.
All-day sun. And when you plant them in a grouping, They're stunning. Mm-hmm. They'll provide you endless color all season long. And do them in one color palette. Okay? When I say that, you know, and now if you want to plant a red one or a pink one or even the one that's yellow called popcorn that will eventually, it opens up yellow, turns a little white. Looks like popcorn. But they just do so well. But mm-hmm. if you do them all in one color, no pun intended, like a sea or a drift of one color, it makes more of an impact.
Sure.
Especially in the landscape.
Yeah, see, I get here a little earlier than you do. I always stop and make sure I pay attention to those and, you know, tidy them up along the way. And then when you get here, they look gorgeous.
Is that what it is? They did. I mean, and you know, rose bushes, too, they like cooler temperatures. And that's why, you know, early in the year, you see them at their best. And then later in the year, when it gets cool in the fall season, you see them at their best again. They're at their peak.
What about fragrance? Are they as fragrant as other roses?
No, not quite. Mm-hmm. Now, I've not noticed any of that. Now, everyone smells, everyone's olfactory, I guess, you smell things differently. And, you know, there are a lot of other roses that have stronger fragrances that might be more of a citrus type of fragrance. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about that, too. But the Drift Rose, get out to your local home and or your garden centers and nurseries and check them out this spring season. I like them a lot. I don't talk about them often. And the other element that I want to say and talk more about, too, when it comes to maintenance, there's just a few things that you need to know and a few things that you need to do. And we're going to talk about that when we come back out of the break. But maintenance, don't worry about it when it comes to Drift Roses. We're going to tell you more about that in a few minutes.
Mm-hmm. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We'll be right back.
In color, it makes more of an impact.
Sure.
Especially in the landscape.
Yeah, see, I get here a little earlier than you do. I always stop and make sure I pay attention to those and, you know, tidy them up along the way. And then when you get here, they look gorgeous.
Is that what it is? They did. I mean, and you know, rose bushes, too, they like cooler temperatures. And that's why, you know, early in the year, you see them at their best. And then later in the year, when it gets cool in the fall season, you see them at their best again. They're at their peak.
What about fragrance? Are they as fragrant as other roses?
No, not quite. Mm-hmm. Now, I've not noticed any of that. Now, everyone smells, everyone's olfactory, I guess, you smell things differently. And, you know, there are a lot of other roses that have stronger fragrances that might be more of a citrus type of fragrance. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about that, too. But the Drift Rose, get out to your local home and or your garden centers and nurseries and check them out this spring season. I like them a lot. I don't talk about them often.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We're talking a little bit about Drift Roses, and now we're going to help you out by explaining that you do have some responsibility with those. Like many plants, you just can't put them in the ground and walk away from them.
Yeah, not a lot of maintenance, though. You know, you don't need a maintenance.
Got to have a little maintenance.
You don't need your tool rack and all that kind of stuff. You don't need to jack it up and look underneath the hood. You know, if you're asking what kind of maintenance is really involved with the Drift Roses, I'm here to tell you very little. Mm-hmm. And just like anything else, you know, like your other rose bushes, you want to prune them back every year, late winter, early spring.
Right.
You want to plant them in areas or locations where they'll receive at least 6 hours of sun a day if you want that bloom production. And that's exactly what you were talking about a moment ago when you were talking about there being enough sun.
Right.
Buy those Drift Roses that are near the front door of our building here at 2060. And what else is important is that you provide really good drainage for your rose bushes.
You know, why they're on the slope there. That provides
good drainage for a lot of things when you plant. Make sure things don't sit in water. They don't want to sit in water. And probably most important, especially when it comes to rose bushes, is that you locate rose bushes in your landscape beds or in areas where there's ample air movement.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very important, because a lot of times, you know, rose bushes can end up with a little bit of powdery mildew. And when you see that, it looks like a little talcum powder, kind of has that powdery look on top of the foliage.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's an indicator, you know, high humidity, a little bit of moisture, lack of air movement, things like that. And sometimes, if that comes about, don't be alarmed. There are products that you can use to, you know, combat those type of diseases and so forth. Fungicides that are available, like Dakinil. Also, you'll see that go under the name chlorothalonil. You know, you can use those products on your roses. But try to use those prior to you seeing an outbreak of things of the sort.
Yeah.
But giving them plenty of room amongst and around other plants in a landscape is so important, because it keeps those disease issues at bay. So that's probably the most important thing that you need to keep in mind when you're planting a rose bush.
Mm-hmm.
Fertilizer. We all like to eat, don't we?
I love it.
Well, you know, when it comes to fertilization and fertilizing our rose bushes, this is so important also that as we go through the growing season, rose bushes require a little more than normal when it comes to maybe two plates, you know, instead of the one plate when you sit down for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
They're heavy feeders.
So, hey, like me.
Yeah, they're heavy feeders. And there's a couple of different things that you can use when we fertilize our rose bushes. I'll just name a couple just to kind of point you in the right direction. You know, Fertilin makes a rose food with a 14, 12, 11 analysis. That's your nitrogen, your phosphorus, and your potash. They also make that same analysis rose food with a systemic insecticide that you can fertilize and protect them against insects at the same time, and that's the rose and flower food with a systemic insecticide.
Okay.
Also, you can use Espoma's rose tone. And another fertilizer that I like a lot, you don't see it often. I know Bart over at Burger Farms, he fertilizes with it with their plants in their nursery through their injection system. And I think they sell some too, if I'm not mistaken. But a lot of people, if you're familiar with Monty's Plant Food, remember we had Monty's son-in-law in here.
Right.
It's a local company, not quite local, but they're from out of Louisville, Kentucky. And the Monty's Plant Food is an 8-16-8 analysis, and it was originally developed for rose bushes by Monty himself, the late, great Monty. He had passed away a couple years ago. I love that fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
But just what's really important is that you're fertilizing your rose bushes on a monthly basis throughout the growing season.
Okay.
As we get towards the tail end of the season and are fast approaching the fall, we back off that fertilization process, because we don't want to encourage new growth, and then all of a sudden you get into those cold snaps, and that new tender growth gets damaged as a result of.
So when do you fertilize? Do you do that first thing in the morning, late in the afternoon, or at night?
Well, using granular products, you know, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
When you're using granular products, and also when you're watering, if you're using a water soluble fertilizer and you're watering it in, do not get it on the foliage. Always underneath, because we talked about powdery mildew,
mm-hmm,
and other types of diseases that you can bring about by allowing that foliage to stay wet, especially during the overnight hours,
mm-hmm,
when it's extremely humid at night.
Right.
So that water doesn't dry off like it does in a day.
And when's the best time to water? That
I always like the water in the morning.
Yeah.
But if you're staying underneath the foliage, that's water when you need to water.
Sure.
You know, I know a lot of us have jobs during the day. You know, I know you don't. You got all the time in the world. But, you know, just stay off the foliage when you're watering rose bushes.
Sure.
You'll be glad that you did. You're saving yourself from a lot of issues with potential disease,
sure,
problems.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And when we come back,
yeah, we're going to talk a little bit more about the drift roses and a little bit of maintenance with the drift roses, all of your roses as far as that goes. And we're going to talk about protecting them against insects throughout the growing season.
We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We've been talking a little bit about your drift roses, where you can put them, and we've also been talking a little bit about maintenance, and there's more to learn.
Absolutely. So when we're trying to maintain our rose bushes, and not just the drifts necessarily, all of our rose bushes, you know, it's really important to keep the rose slug off of them. And
uh-huh,
that is the pesky fellow that just eats away at those beautiful green, deep green leaves. And all of a sudden, you're just riddled with all these holes.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like somebody just took a shotgun to them, or just like, what happened? But and they have many, many generations, family members throughout the course of the season. They don't just feed once and they're gone. It's continuous. You know, there's several generations that occur and happen throughout the growing season. But Fertilooms Systemic tree and shrub drench is a great product to keep these pesky fellows off of your rose bushes. You know, aphids, any other insects that want to plague and get on and hang out on your rose bushes, this is a great product to use. And it's real simple. You're going to use you're going to use 3 ounces per foot height of plant to a gallon of water.
Not more gazindas. 3 into a gallon, 3 gazinda gallon.
Three gazinda. Say that again.
Gazindas.
Gazinda.
Yeah, from
gazinda.
Jethro on the Beverly Hillbillies when he would do math. He would ask about gazindas. 3 gazinda 9.
Yeah, gazinda 9 3 times. 3 ounces of drench product per foot height of plant to a gallon of water. So, in essence, when you cut back your rose bushes, you usually trim them back to around, you know, a foot in height, give or take.
Yeah.
So don't just use 3 ounces of the solution. You need to anticipate what they're capable of growing to. And I think this is where a lot of people get into trouble, and they say, or they'll come into the nursery, and they'll mention that I've used that product, but not with much success.
Right. Okay.
It's really determined about how much you use, given what that plant's capable of growing to. And at least factor on your knockout roses or your other hybrid tea roses or what have you to get at least 3 to 4 foot.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, if it's 3 foot, you need 9 ounces of this product into a gallon to 2 gallons of water. Little tip too, I always found that it mixes better if you pour the product into the bucket first and then add water.
Why?
And, well, it just
blends it a little better.
I think it dissipates and it dilutes it better.
Sure.
And then when you apply this product, it doesn't need to go into the foliage, or you don't spray the plant with it. You just water it in slowly around the base of the plant, and it will give you 1 year protection. And that's the Fertilume's Systemic Tree and Shrub Drench. It's a great, great product. You can also use it on trees as well. And trees, the application rate's a little different than it is when you're using it on shrubs, as we were just talking about the rose bush. For trees, you're going to use 1 ounce per inch of distance around the trunk. So that's the circumference, not the diameter, the circumference. So if you were to take a tape measure and go around your tree trunk and say it's 22 inches around circumference, you're going to use 22 ounces. So that's the application rate for trees.
Mm.
And very, very effective product, a very good product to use. Use it, you know, in a responsible way, not when things are in bloom prior to all of that, because, you know, there's a lot of controversy over protection of the bees. So we just need to be careful when we're using certain products.
Certainly.
And how it works, it is a systemic. When we talk about systemics, it works like this. As we pour the product around the base of a shrub or the tree, it will work its way into that tree or that shrub's root system. That root system will in turn take it up through the plant and protect it. So that's the mechanism of how it works. It's almost like, you know, getting a vaccination, so to speak.
Sure.
So it's a great way to protect your plants, and it works really, really well. And last but not least, when it comes to our rose bushes, deadheading. It's not a major task, and don't shake your head and think, gosh, here we go, more maintenance and more work. If you pinch out the old spent blooms, you're going to encourage other new bloom buds to develop and have more color.
Right.
And it won't look as unsightly. So a little deadheading never hurts anybody.
You know, it's just a little way to kind of relax a little bit, unwind from the day. You're spending a little time with your plants.
Yeah, a beer in one hand and take your right finger and just deadhead
things.
That's right. Or if you want to use your pruners, you can certainly do that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But, the drift rose, there you have it. Great plant. And I've just been thinking about roses because we spent a couple of days, we pot up a lot of rose bushes, and we do a lot of drifts, we do a lot of other rose bushes, mm-hmm. and there's some others too. When we talk with Tim Wood, I want him to talk about some of the memorial roses. Very, very interesting. Love the names, love the fragrance, love the performance that they can give us. And hang in there with us, because at the top of the hour, our good friend from Star Roses, Tim Wood, will be joining us. We're going to do a little phone call with Tim.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And still kind of rainy and ugly outside, although temperatures are going to warm up. We've had some really bizarre weather. And the last week we've had two nights where it was deep, deep freezes. How much damage did that do?
It's hard to say how it shakes out, Ernie. You know, definitely there's going to be some issues. A lot of people who perhaps have magnolias like yourself, we were discussing that a little earlier in the show, that where those buds have frozen out, you're not going to get that bloom production. And the further along they were, the less likely you're going to enjoy that bloom show. Mm-hmm. Also, some of our peach trees, you know, that could be an issue as well. You know, a little less fruit production. And I think this happened a couple of years ago. And it just wipes things out. It just makes it all for none. And then all of a sudden, we find ourselves, like, scratching our heads and thinking about, wow, we'll have to wait another year before we can get peaches. Or we'll have to wait another year before we see those beautiful blooms.
Mm-hmm.
You never know what Mother Nature throws our way. And, you know, what happens, too, did you notice that some of the wild pears out there were starting to show color on the hillsides? You know, that white bloom.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you know, it got really cold, a little bit of rain, moisture. It's not as pronounced as it was at this time last year.
I agree.
It does. It comes into play.
749-B105 in and around the house. Also wanted to remind you that there's a couple of ways for you to stay connected with us. Look us up on Facebook. As a matter of fact, Tony posted a couple of great examples of why it's important to get a soil sample and get it to your local county extension agent. And also via Facebook, email us in and around the house at B105.com. We always try to respond back in a timely manner and get those questions answered for you.
Absolutely. And I want to touch base on a couple upcoming events. One of the biggest upcoming events is kicking off next week, the 25th, at the Crone Conservatory, Ernie.
Oh.
That's the Majestic Monarch. And plus, about the Monarch, this year the perennial plant of the year is the Asclepias, the butterfly weed, tuberosa. Mm-hmm. So everything's coming into play here in favor of the Monarch. And that's such a wonderful show. I've already reached out to Amanda Hurdle-Brink to see if we can perhaps have a longtime friend come in and join us again and talk more about the butterfly show, and that's Andrea Shepman. So we'll see how that pans out. In addition to that, our good friend Vicky Tuis is putting together the Ohio Valley Seed Swap, and that will be taking place Saturday, April 8th at the Boone County Enrichment Center. Certainly check that out. Also, this is very interesting, too, and I don't know if this is limited to a number of guests, but putting your style into your garden with John Karloftis. John Karloftis is a renowned gardener. He's from the state of Kentucky and got his notoriety by developing and setting up and designing a lot of rooftop gardens in the Big Old Apple.
Nice.
New York City.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be taking place at the Boone County Arboretum April 5th from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. You can also, I think something's going to be taking place at the Boone County Extension Enrichment Center. But check that out. And I think that you can register at www.bcarboretum.org/events. So a couple things just they'll be taking place here in the next couple of weeks.
Awesome.
Something you might certainly be interested in.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Tim Woods, and we've got some more great information coming your way. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, just after 8 o'clock, and we have our friend Tim on the line. Thanks for getting up early and getting started with us, Tim.
Good morning. How is everybody?
Wonderful.
We're doing well. How about yourself?
You know, it's just another day in paradise.
Oh, yeah. Is it raining where you are? What's the weather like?
It's gray and misty and about 34 degrees. You know, one of my favorite type of weather to go outside in.
Mm. Oh, I hear you. That's what I'm staring at right now as we speak. The same kind of weather. Just dreary. It had a chill about it yesterday, too. It was just kind of, for whatever reason, it was brutal.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
This is the worst. It just snow.
Well, we have Tim Wood with us. He's a representative of Star Roses. And Star Roses is the company that has brought us the Knockout Rose over the years and also the Drift Rose that we've just recently been talking about this morning. And, Tim, do you have any favorite drift roses? Any in particular that that you like or color?
I do, actually. Pink drift is actually one of my favorites. From a landscape perspective, it's probably the toughest of the bunch. Has the most unique habit, kind of a little mushroom kind of shaped plant, really heavy blooming into the fall. Now, it isn't as popular because it's a single flower as opposed to a double flower.
Right.
So it doesn't have as many petals, but to me, Pink Drift is by far the best of the bunch. And the rest of the drift are great. It's just that Pink Drift, to me, just seeing it in the landscape as it matures and how it performs, it doesn't get any better than that.
Right. You know, and really, the Drift Rose is ideal for people who have space constraints. They have small garden beds, or they just want something to just accent an area. I know that right outside the studio here at our building, we have some drift roses, and I was so impressed with those guys last year, the early part of the fall season. They were just at peak. They were in their heyday. They just were blooming their heads off. And I say this all the time, too. People have to appreciate a drift. Once it's been in the ground for a season, it behaves totally different than when you see it in a container.
Agree 100%. It blooms a little bit later in the season than, say, a knockout. So when you're at your local garden center, whereas a knockout will probably be in full color, a drift is going to be budded. But just the habit and the performance and the whole story behind drift was our breeding partner, Mayon, in France, with the advent and the release and success of knockout, came to us and said, okay, we really get what you're looking for. What can we do? And we said, we want a dwarf knockout. And I hate to, they're completely different plants, but we were looking for that performance in a miniature shrub rose, and our partners in France came back with the Drift Series. And the one thing I do like about the Drift Series over the Knockout Series is the better selection of color from white with white drift to popcorn with a little bit of a yellow all the way through just about the whole rainbow.
Yeah. At the garden center at Jackson's, we saw a lot. It's always coral. People lean towards coral.
Yeah.
And a little towards apricot as well. They like those colors.
Yep.
And everybody's a little different, but I'm like you. An array of colors, I think, what, eight to choose from?
Yeah, matter of fact.
So,
and more coming down the road eventually. Can't talk about that. It's top secret.
Oh, it's top secret, classified. We'll do a little wiretapping on you. No, I'm just kidding you. So, you know, something else, too, that I find very interesting and think highly about are the memorial roses in your collection at Star. Let's touch base on some of those. How many are there? Five?
There are five, correct.
Five. And the one that I find most interesting as well is, well, all five, actually, but is Nicole Carol Miller. Tell us a little bit about Nicole Carol Miller, that variety.
Great red hybrid tea. It is a little bit more of a West Coast variety, and we were commissioned to do this rose in tribute to Nicole Carol Miller, who was on one of the flights during 9/11. And we for that particular variety, we make a contribution to the 9/11 fund for every Nicole Carol Miller that we sell. Along with that, you have Memorial Day. We have Silver Star and some other military-based memorial roses, which we contribute to the World War II Memorial Fund as well.
Mm-hmm. And Eternal Flame is another one. And
correct.
Actually, these have the memorial roses have strong fragrances for the most part, and also they make really good cutting roses as well.
Yes, and they're very good landscape performers for a hybrid tea. Bronze Star is another, and yes, it is. We tried to stick, as opposed to what we're known for in shrub roses, we're also pretty darn good at hybrid teas and grandifloras, and we wanted good landscape performance, and we wanted to make sure these were cut so that they could be brought indoors and a little more utility than just being left outside.
Right. Well, I just thought this was appropriate because it was a little over a week ago we got our roses in from you guys at Star, and it just seems like it takes days to pot all those up. You know, you're just like potting it up and listening to the radio and turning the soil and mixing the soil. And I thought, how appropriate. And you know, everyone loves the rose. just the fragrance is there, and everybody, they think of their grandmothers too. And roses aren't difficult to take care of. You know, give us your spin on it and tell us some things that you would encourage homeowners to do if they want to, in fact, have really nice rose bushes.
You know, the key, it all comes back to trimming, to me. And I know there's been a lot of talk about rose rosette and other issues with roses. And, mm-hmm. and the more we look at a lot of the disease issues and the trouble that people have with roses, the more that people go out in the spring and they trim and they cut it back and get rid of those stems, the better performance they're going to have from a rose in the ease of care they're going to have in the landscape. Removal of old canes is so important. It gets rid of old disease spores from the previous year. More importantly, it creates juvenile foliage, and roses bloom much better on juvenile foliage as opposed to old mature foliage, as we all know as we get a little bit older. And you're 100% correct. They really aren't as difficult to grow as what people think they are.
Mm-hmm.
Stick with the newer varieties, especially from Star, where we are investing a tremendous amount of money and research in own root hybrid teas. That's the last 5 years, all of our new introductions have been own root hybrid teas. We're looking for disease resistance. The days of, and I hate to say it because Mr. Lincoln is still, and Peace are still two of our biggest sellers.
Yes.
But they look horrible in August. You got a flower bud and thorns. All the leaves have disappeared.
That's to be expected. That's to be expected.
Exactly.
You just hit on something very interesting, too. Explain to us why it's important to be on a rose bush to be on its own root versus those that are grafted and why we do that.
Well, grafting was done because with rose breeding, varieties were not able to support themselves on their own roots. They were bred for flower form, for flower color, for fragrance, and because of the advent and the practice of grafting, they put that particular variety that couldn't support itself on its own onto a grafted plant, which is typically Dr. Huey is the rootstock for it.
Right.
Well, the problem you run into is if you get into a cold winter, you have or a warm winter like we've had, and then a cold snap, you typically tend to, or you have a higher propensity to lose that graft. It will freeze out. It will die. Dr. Huey will come back. The rootstock will come back, but you've lost the top, and all you'll get is big, long, arching canes that bloom maybe once a year if you're lucky. Own root varieties like Knockout, like Drift, like Sunshine Daydream, the newer varieties that we have put out, Francis Mayon, if they get whacked back to the ground by the cold, they're going to come back true to form because right. That whole plant is on, it's one piece, so to speak. It's not a Frankenplant, as I like to refer to them. You've got Francis Mayon at the top as well as the roots. And dying back to the ground, it's going to come back true to form, which you don't get with the older garden roses. So that's one of the reasons that own root is so much is so important and why we're investing that and going that way.
Right. Well illustrated. Hold on for a moment because we're going to keep you on hold and we're going to come back into another segment and talk more about rose bushes. Some of the things that are new that you guys are developing there at Star Roses and the hometown roses. We'll talk about that when we come back out of the break.
We have Tim Wood on the line with us in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have our friend Tim Wood on the line, and we're talking about drift roses. Thanks, Tim, for holding on.
And Tim,
good morning.
Yeah, give us a little bit of information if people are wanting to do a little research on their own about Star Roses and the products that you guys offer. How can they get in touch with you guys?
Simple. StarRosesAndPlants.com. We have great photography on there, lots of information about the different varieties. We also have a zip code index search where you can go ahead and type in your zip code, and it will give you a list of retailers in your area where you can find our product.
All right. And what's new at Star Roses, by the way? Tell us a little bit about the new regional knockout varieties, the hometown varieties. What's going on there?
Well, we've been up to a lot in the last year or so. We've been We've merged with a company called Ball Horticulture, which is another family-owned company out of West Chicago. We're very excited about that, especially being family-owned and having the same values that we've had at Star Roses and Plants. And as a result, we're investing a tremendous amount more on the woody end as well as the rose end. On the rose end, we're very excited to introduce what we're calling regional knockouts. We all know that certain plants perform better in certain regions, and we have plants that in the Midwest, in southern Ohio, northern Kentucky, central Ohio, are going to perform just like knockouts. And so why not give that variety the knockout name just because it doesn't perform well down in, say, Miami? It's not necessarily fair. So we're very pleased to bring what we're referring to regional knockouts to the United States this summer, starting July 1st. Though my guess is you'll find them out there a little bit sooner than that. And we have three new varieties that will be introduced through that program. We have a white shrub rose that gets only about knee-high with purple foliage called White Knockout. We have an orange semi-double, which is a little bit bigger, gets about 4 to 6 foot. And about that in spread, called Coral Knockout. And we have another variety, which is more of a peach color, called Peachy Knockout, which is going to be in the normal range of a knockout, say 3 to 4 foot by 3 to 4 foot.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the Whiteout's been around for a little while, and I've always picked those up from Kruger-Matic's, and they've done relatively well. And I know that early on, a couple years ago, you and I talked about it briefly, that it just didn't meet the cut all throughout. So,
exactly. And there is the little secret about regional knockouts, and what White Knockout is Whiteout. And because of the advent of the regional knockout program, we've been able to elevate that to the knockout name and give it its due and its place. Because quite frankly, Whiteout, you and I have discussed this in the past, it is, in my opinion, the best of the bunch in the knockout breeding. Just because it didn't perform down in Miami, it wasn't able to get that name, and I'm very pleased to be able to call it a knockout.
You know, I think that one in particular really pops, because when you get that really nice, that white bloom with the dark green foliage, it really stands out, especially from a distance, and I've always liked it. So I think it's one definitely well worth having. So tell us a little bit about the Peach Knockout, what was that previously?
That one was called Peachy Keen, which it's been out now for probably 3 or 4 years.
Right.
It's going to be about 3 to 4 foot by 3 to 4 foot. Pretty decent sized flower, actually one of the largest flowers in the Radler, the Knockout family.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a nice coral, kind of a peachy coral, and then cleans pretty rapidly, so it holds that color as opposed to turning like a white or a brown and hanging onto the plant. It'll drop and clean very, very rapidly, very disease resistant, very cold hardy, very good plant.
Yeah, and take us into the drift world. What's the new regional drift?
New regional drift is not going to be for the Midwest.
Okay.
That's one of the beauties of these regional programs, and it kills me that we can't offer it here, but it's not as good of a plant, which is why we've devised this regional program. It's called Lemon Drift. It was the shrub variety Limoncello. There are some disease issues. We refer to things on a scale of 1 to 10. In the Midwest, it's good. It's actually very good. It's going to be in the 7 to 8. But to hit the knockout or drift scale in the in a region, it has to perform as a 10, meaning no black spot. It needs to rebloom freely, and it needs to be cold hardy. And lemon drift is perfect for the West Coast for drier regions, but not necessarily going to be knockout level in the Midwest.
Got it. Well, you know, while we're on that same note, we're talking about diseases and so forth. Hold on to that thought. We're going to take a quick break because I want to talk a little bit about rose maintenance and some of the disease issues that we sometimes see and how we can control those.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we have Tim Wood on the line with us, and we've been talking about drift roses. And, boy, it's just been a wealth of information, Tim. Appreciate you joining us on the show this morning.
You are welcome, and thank you for having me.
You know, Tim, when we talk about roses, a lot of people think that, wow, you know, they require a lot of our time, a lot of our, you know, efforts and so forth throughout the season, which I think a lot of times is the furthest from the truth. Sure, we got to put our due diligence forward and help them along throughout the season. But let's talk a little bit about maintenance. You know, what can homeowners typically expect to see their, you know, and their rose bushes, and what should they be on the lookout for?
Well, first of all, let's talk about the variety that you're putting in the ground, because that's really where it starts. And yeah, you can buy pretty inexpensive old roses and put them in the ground, and you may save a buck or two initially, but in the long run, it's going to be a lot more work. It's going to be a lot more money for insect and disease prevention and so on. So spend an extra $3 at the garden center or $4, get one of the newer varieties, and from Star Roses and Plants. Again, our newer varieties are going to be own root, they're going to be cold hardy, and they're going to be very disease resistant right out of the store and into the landscape. Key with roses is making sure that they have 6 or more hours of sunlight. That's a question I always get. You know, where can I put this? I don't have a southern facing, or I don't have a western facing. Well, you know what? I've got probably 8 to 10 roses growing on the east side of my house. They get morning sunlight. They get more than 6 hours of sunlight a day, and they thrive, and they're floriferous and wonderful growing plants. So, again, more than 6 hours of sunlight.
Yeah.
Fertilizer, slow-release fertilizer. I prefer granular. Think of liquid fertilizers as cotton candy. It's going to be an initial punch. It's going to make them turn green. It's going to make them grow. But there's nothing there. It's all fluff, so to speak, whereas a good slow-release garden fertilizer, rose-type fertilizer, is going to steadily feed it over time. And sometimes you may, you know, you're going to have to read the labels. Some of them you do once a month. Some may be season-long. The key is making sure that they have plenty of food up until the 4th of July. The last fertilizer application should be the 4th of July so that it can settle down and harden off. It was referred to harden off, get ready for winter. Lastly, trimming. Trimming is so important with roses. We discussed that earlier, from disease prevention to vigor of the plant. Personally, and we've discussed this in the past as well, I'm not a fan of trimming in the fall. I prefer to trim in the spring. And if you're going to go out and say late winter, February or March, give yourself some room. Don't trim it all the way down to the nubs, but cut it back by at least 2/3. You could, if it's a warm winter and a cold spring, you could have a freezing effect, which you'll lose a portion of the stems that you've cut back. So it's important to give yourself a little bit of wiggle room in there. And the same goes for trimming in the fall. If you cut everything back in the fall, you will have some winter kill. You will have some dieback in those.
Mm-hmm.
And if you trim them back hard in the winter, you may not give yourself as much wiggle room, and you may have an issue with that getting into the crown or the growing portion of the plant.
Right. You know, something else that's important I want to ask you is properly planting a rose bush. And if it is on its own root, or if it's budded, you know, if
yes.
It's budded 2 inches below the soil or right at the soil surface, what's your flare?
On budded, I want to make sure that the bud is about an inch or so underground, or somewhere in that range. And that's
right.
Mainly for protection, and then making sure that on a budded rose that you're mulching in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to do that really late. You want to make sure that we're talking Thanksgiving, maybe, you know, December, just depends on the weather in the fall that we're having,
right.
But insulating that graft. Whereas with an own root rose, again, why it's so important to pick an own root rose, plant it, depending on your soil type. With a clay soil, you're going to plant it so that you've got about a half inch to an inch above grade. You're going to mulch, and you're just going to make sure that you don't have mulch piled up around the base of the plant. You want it level. You can have a little bit thicker mulch out away from the plant, but around the crown, around the base of the plant, you want to make sure that it's a pretty thin layer. In sandy soils, you're going to plant it even with the soil line, and just make sure that your mulch is even around it. Amend the soil. two-thirds original soil, a third a compost or a peat moss and sand, compost in clay. It's very important that the soil you take out of the hole goes back in. Try to stay away from, especially in clay soil, the bag of topsoil. And digging a hole in clay and then planting your rows with just that topsoil, you create a bathtub effect and the plant will actually drown. So the soil that goes out of the hole is the soil that goes back in. You just amend it with either, again, peat moss and sand, right, compost and clay.
Well put. That's so important. And I sometimes when I see even the budded varieties, the grafted varieties, where they're sticking about 6 inches up above the pot, I'm like, I know that was improperly planted or taken care of, but it's important to protect that graft, that's for sure. Hey,
absolutely.
Let's turn the page and go to climbers. What do you think about climbers?
Love climbers. In the right situations, climbers are great plants, and that's actually a category that has remained strong, even though people are not necessarily planting as many hybrid teas as they used to.
Mm-hmm.
Climbers have still remained a very strong area for us. And again, same difference with the hybrid teas. You want to make sure that you're looking for an own root variety.
Right.
And again, our varieties are that we've released the last 4 or 5 years, our own root, and disease resistance. We're proud to have a new variety called Fruity Petals.
Okay, well, hold on to that thought, though. We're going to hang on with you one more segment and talk about these climbers, and we're going to talk about Fruity Petals. Not pebbles, petals.
When we come back.
Get it around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have our friend Tim Wood on the line from Star Roses, and we have just been absorbing so much information this morning. Thank you so much for calling and hanging out with us.
Again, thank you for having me on this morning.
Always a pleasure, Tim. Real quick, give us some contact information or where our listening audience can perhaps go and visit Star Roses.
Again, starrosesandplants.com, and we have multiple links on there from a zip code search to find your local garden center to an Ask the Expert link that you can fill in a question and hit send, and it will get to our rose gurus, and we'll get an answer back to you.
Thank you so much. We also have it posted for our local listeners. It's on our In and Around the House Facebook page. You can just click the link. It'll take it right to it.
And we didn't mean to cut you short there. We had to go into a break, but we were talking about climbing roses. And tell us a little bit about what's going on in the climbing rose world. And you said there's a new one for this year?
Again, a new one from this year from Will Radler, who is the breeder of Knockout and has been so prolific with introductions of really high-quality, high-disease-resistance roses. The new introduction is called Fruity Petals. It's actually an improvement over one of my old favorite climbers called Bright Eyes. And so we have actually discontinued Bright Eyes, and we're proud to introduce Fruity Petals. A little bit brighter flower color, same idea in the color scheme as Bright Eyes. You're going to have some corals, some pinks, some yellows, kind of a multi-color flower. Fruity Petals just brings a little bit more and a little bit brighter color, a little more coral, a little more yellow, and a little more contrast. Own roots, highly disease resistant, and also climbs a little bit higher. Bright Eyes used to only climb about 4 to 5 foot. This is going to be a good 4 to 6, maybe 7 foot climber as well.
Awesome. What are some other favorites? You know, it seems like we always have a lot of customers coming to the garden center, and they're asking for Joseph's Coat still, another newer climbing rose, another Winter Circle is the one I was trying to think of. Another Radler rose. That's been really popular as well.
Great red. Mm-hmm. Kind of an improved blaze. Now, it is more of a single flower, so sometimes when I say that, people look at me cross-eyed. But what I mean by that is a really good red and a real prolific bloomer.
Right.
Very disease-resistant and very hardy as well.
And you have any favorite climbers other than, what'd you say, Fruity Petals?
You know what? I actually do, but I'm going to go back, and it's going to be, I hate to say it, these are going to be budded varieties.
Yeah, go ahead.
They're going to be the Eden series. And so, you know, we haven't quite got there yet with own root on these big double climbers. But from Red Eden to a newer introduction that we had called Pretty in Pink Eden.
Right.
Kind of that English rose kind of feel. This comes out of our Romanica series, which is basically the French Pride version of an English rose. Very fragrant. They have significantly better disease resistant than the English roses. And just great reblooming plants with large flowers and good fragrance.
I know one thing. I was last summer, we were up at the Botanical Gardens in New York City, and we had the pleasure of going through their Peggy Rockefeller Rose Garden, and just everything was just prolific. I mean, all the rose bushes were at peak, and the climbers were stunning, and it was really cool to see a lot of varieties that I've always seen in the catalogs and heard people talk about in full bloom. And again, I think that... you know, we tend to forget about the rose bush sometimes, and it's still an old-time favorite amongst everybody, and especially our grandmothers. And going for that fragrance is of the utmost importance. And there's a lot of value to the rose bush in the landscape. There's no doubt about it. And, Tim, I can't thank you enough. We need to have you come down here physically sometime, and we could... The sky's the limit. We could talk forever and a day about rose bushes. And is there anything that you want to point out or bring to our attention before we conclude?
Well, I would like to have you and your listeners on the lookout for a new hydrangea that we're introducing called Cherry Explosion. It will be it will be very limited if you find it at all. So I'm a little hesitant to bring it up because I don't want to get people to get too excited about it.
Right.
But it is a very dark red lace cap. And when I say lace cap, some people, you know, they're not as showy as the mop heads, but this particular one is extraordinarily showy. Large flower bracts on it, and they hold for a very long period of time. Cold hardy to zone 4. Prolific blooms on new wood and old wood. Very good plant. Doesn't flop like some of the mop heads that are out there. So look on your radar. You might see some of them this spring, but more than likely it's going to be spring 2018. But again, Cherry Explosion. I'm excited about it because I found it through one of our partners and customers up in Wisconsin. So it's coming out of central Wisconsin.
Cool. Well, it sounds like a great one. We'll be on the lookout for it. Tim, thanks. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Thanks,
Tim.
749-B105, and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Got a break for a minute. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We sort of got out of the realm there and went to a guy. He's from Columbus. Is that what you said? Tim Wood?
Yeah, Tim Wood from Star Roses.
Great interview.
I think he's up north somewhere. Oh, I tell you what, you want to meet a guy that's passionate about what he does for a living and just the horticultural business overall, Tim is it.
Yeah.
I mean, he can go on and on and on, and just he's full of information. He's been doing it for a number of years. Valuable information as far as that goes.
Yep.
I've learned a great deal from Tim over the years, and we last week, I don't know, we spent a lot of time potting up rose bushes. We buy a lot of bare root rose bushes from Star Roses. Check it out on our Facebook page. I think you did put a link up there.
You can get his information by jumping onto our Facebook page, Star Roses and Plants, and it'll take you right to his page.
A lot of great information, as a matter of fact, on their website. And if you really want to dig into some information about rose bushes, that's the place to do it. Most of the rose bushes that you see here in the tri-state area, rest assured, a great deal of them come from Star Roses. They are a great rose company, breeders. I mean, they bring it together. They bring it to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And like he said, they partnered up with Ball Seed Company out of Chicago. So they're pushing the envelope. They're coming up with new varieties of different shrubs.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the hydrangea he was talking about, Cherry Explosion. Heard about it. I've not really seen it. I know that it's new. It's on the horizon. And like Tim was saying, a lot of times when you read about new plants, new shrubs, they're not always the easiest to find that season that you read about them for the very first time.
Right.
It takes a while to get them into the retail segment, you know, and you know, propagating and getting everything retail ready. So you find those kind of new plants and introductions on a limited basis. So, you know, and that's the beauty of going to your local independent garden centers and nurseries. We have access to this new stuff more so readily than the chains, believe it or not. We're connected with these breeders and the growers. We know a lot what's coming on their horizon, and we can procure those, as you know, for you, or we'll do our best to do it, or we'll point you in the right direction. And that's the beauty of dealing with local businesses and garden centers.
So how long does it take when he mentioned a new plant coming in and it won't be available for a while? They have to bring it in and see if it's going to survive in this area, or
not necessarily. That's not really the dilemma. It's already been tested in trials. And for example, we've been up to the Ball Seed Company. They do a lot of trials, and Ball Seed does a lot of things with annuals. Now they're getting more into the woodies. When we say woodies, we're talking shrubs. But Ball Seed, they're out of Chicago, and they have trial beds up there of annuals, bed after bed after bed. And what they do, you know, every year they'll trial something for two or three seasons. Mm-hmm. They chart it. You know, they talk about, you know, the weather conditions, how well things performed. Did it not meet standards? Did it need more water than what they thought? Or did it get diseases? How did it perform? Right. Did it need a lot of deadheading? So there's a lot of time and effort with trialing plants before we bring them to the retail sector, to the residential area.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get to that point, you say, hey, this plant or this shrub is truly what it's all about. The next step is finding good, reliable, clean growers that are willing to partner up and start mass producing these things.
Okay.
And that's where it all comes from. And when something is new for the very first time or introduced that year, you might have a grower that is has the rights to grow that new shrub, and they may have 150 in the nursery. And what they'll do, they'll take all of their customer base and they'll say, we can only allot you 10.
Right.
Okay. You know, there's no one that's going to get greedy and say, hey, I want all 60 of those or what you have left.
Sure.
So they try to proportion that out, but it takes a little time to bring it to the retail environment.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. He was a fantastic interview. We're talking about Tim Wood from Star Roses and Plants. And if you go to our Facebook page, we have the link right to his website. Fantastic stuff.
You know, something else I want to touch base on before we conclude this morning are various types of soils. Now, we don't have a lot of time to get into the soils, but for those people who are avid gardeners and or even the novice, as far as that goes, you're wanting to start working on things around the house, although it's still relatively cool, it's overcast. Take advantage of some of these days to take care of some of those issues with, you know, some of our pots, our window boxes, and so forth. If you're looking for a good soil mix for those containers, I'm going to steer you right in one direction, and you'll be very, very successful with this mixture. I really like the Fertilume Ultimate Potting Soil. It's in a red bag. You will find it only at your local independently owned garden centers and nurseries. And I like to take that particular soil, and I like to mix it 50-50 with Garden Magic Topsoil.
Okay.
Now, we have two different things coming into play with these two particular varieties of soil. The Fertilume Ultimate Potting Mix is primarily sphagnum peat moss, okay, with coarse perlite in it. Just a little bit of limestone, a little fertilizer charge, and a wetting agent. And what it is, that's what you find most of your plants somewhat planted in, is that type of a mixture. It's really a soilless mixture.
Yeah.
And it's more conducive for growing things in because you get better root penetration and development. It's lighter in weight, so you typically find your plants grown in that type of a medium throughout the tri-state area. Gotcha. At all the garden centers. Mm-hmm. And everybody buys various mixtures from various soil producers. But for the homeowner, to do your own window boxes and to do your containers or your patio porch pots, front porch pots, I like to use the Fertilume Ultimate Potting Soil Mix. And I like to cut it 50-50, like I said, with the Garden Magic Topsoil. And the Garden Magic Topsoil is a decent topsoil with a little sedge peat in it. It's a darker color soil with a little bit of sand. And when you marry these two as a mixture, you'll see this texture that I'm talking about that your plants will do so well in your window boxes and in your containers. You'll be amazed.
Sure.
And once you plant everything into this particular mixture, fertilize with Osmocote, and just spread that on top of the soil surface, so every time you water or it rains, it slowly breaks down.
Gotcha.
And you will have beautiful, beautiful containers. I'm telling you, it's all about the soil base. It really is. You can go out there and buy that 99-cent potting soil, and you're going to get 99 cents worth of crap.
You're going to get your money's worth.
You're going to get your money's worth.
Yeah.
I'll tell you right now, it's all about the soil foundation. Think about it. When you go to the garden center every year, and you spend $75 to $125, why put those beautiful plants that you just spent your hard-earned money on in crappy soil?
Couldn't agree more.
Good. I'm glad you're on board with me.
It just, one of those things is, it just doesn't make good sense.
No, it does not. And, you know, these are soilless mixes that we're talking about. When I talk about the Fertilume Ultimate Potting Mix, it's in the red bag. It's a great soil mix. Doesn't have a lot of bark in it. There are some soil mixes out there that have a lot of bark in it, and that's good for certain things, especially like perennials and shrubs, because you get good drainage when you're in containers.
Mm-hmm.
But when people use that to plant up their house plants or transplant up their house plants indoors, that heavy bark-laden soil, guess what?
Chicken butt.
You know who you're bringing into the house eventually?
Everything.
Those good old friends of everyone. the fungus gnats.
Yeah.
You know,
they love
that bark. That's the perfect environment for them to set up shop. Breed, have families, cousins, aunts, uncles. They're all over the place. When you have friends and guests over, these little pesky guys are flying around, and your guests are chuckling. They're like, they got bugs.
I got those.
They got bugs.
Yeah. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. I want to point out, too, before we leave today, is Tony has a couple of great examples how important it is to take a soil sample from your landscape beds and from your lawns and get it to your county extension agent and get a review of what you're working with. There's nothing worse than working in the blind, so to speak.
Big time. Yeah. And I'm glad you brought that up again as a reminder. And when you take a soil sample, what's really important is get a good random sample.
Mm-hmm.
And all you need to do, if it's like in your landscape beds and it's where perhaps you're thinking about planting a hydrangea, for example, a macrophylla, the ones that we typically see that they're either pink or they're blue. Knowing what that soil pH is important to the color of that plant. So, you know, if it's more acidic, the blooms will be blue. If it's more alkaline, the blooms are going to be pink.
Right.
So take a good random sample, go down about 6-7 inches, pull up that plug, put it in a bucket, get 6 or 7 other plugs in that, you know, that same garden bed, mix everything together, put it in a paper bag, not a plastic bag, take it out to your extension office, and let the staff there know what it is you're wanting to grow, be it if it's a blueberry planting bed, or if it's going to be a vegetable garden, or if it's going to be for your hydrangeas. Whatever it's for, you're going to get back that information with some other notations telling you what you need to do to bring that bed into play to have a very successful growing shrub or a harvest, if it's vegetables or any of the edibles that we all so much we like.
Mm-hmm.
So that's so important, Ernie. That soil sample, I can't say it enough. You'll know what your foundation is made up of.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Have yourself a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.